Welcome everyone to the Crit Raid Podcast for Wednesday, April 24th. This is episode 89. I'm your host, Justin Skirbo, and today I'm joined by Justin Chow. And I'm also joined by Liz Laetano. Liz Laetano.
What's up?
My autopilot kicked in.
Liz Laetano is just so much, it's an
alliteration. Sounds like a superhero.
Yeah, my name sucks now. Sorry.
Yeah. You can blame your husband for that.
What the cool people did with the hyphens and stuff.
Because that's a pain. Your kid's got to have those weird hyphen names. And like, then you look at that kid and you see a kid with a hyphen name, you know.
Jack's your life, Suey. But Luke,
you're like, your parents don't really love each other. That's what's going on. Just
right?
kidding. Just
Laetano.
There was one girl that had a hyphen name and it was so long. And then like, I think it was our senior year. We had like shirts where like everybody's name fit in like 09. She graduated in 09. Her name was so long it didn't fit on one line. So there was a giant gap in the shirt because of her and her stupid parents.
Yeah, it did. It's terrible. It's terrible.
So that's why.
I just think about like,
my name.
I just think about the
not that guy.
Makes sense.
Like the Iowas where you have to like your last name has to fit in the boxes.
Yeah, I just feel like it's easier to have one last name.
I would agree.
You're right.
Yeah.
It's just way easier to be like, we are the
What about those people with two first names? What if you had two first names and two last names?
Mary Claire?
Like,
yeah.
Sue Ellen?
I had...
Joseph Smith?
I had a friend in college, and her name was... Her first name was Kelly, and her middle name was Anne. And, like, Kelly Anne, if you combine them, is a name, like, people have used. And then her sister... They all the sisters had Anne in their name. And instead of her name being Beth and then her middle name being Anne, her first name was Bethann.
I hate that.
Beth, A-N-N. And capital A was Bethann.
Yeah. If I was her friend, I would do her a favor and give her a nickname quick.
Right? Yeah. And we're like, when she did that, we'd be like, she's like, I know, it makes no sense. My parents are stupid.
Be like, well, you're Betty now.
Yeah. So we just called her Beth. Her name was just Beth. And that was a bad example of having two first names.
I wonder what the psychology is behind names and how that affects people.
I don't know, that's why I try and pick semi-normal ones.
There's definitely something like kind of primal about it. Like, there's definitely something kind of primal about it where it's like, because I'm pretty sure when we named James, I saw something afterwards where they were like, the most common name this year is James. And I was like, how the fuck? Like, why? Why is that a thing? Like, we chose that name with very specific reasons, but like, is the rest of the world just thinking that way? Maybe, I guess. I don't know.
No, they're probably not.
I saw a...
How is it? The most popular name.
They're just like
I saw it on social media the other day. Like someone was talking, and she was like, "My daughter turns to me, and she said something about like my name." And she's like, "Well, that's an old people name." And she's like, "And I just realized like people with our names are now old people names."
Exact
and she's
reel.
Like, "Now like Ash, like I think like Ashley and Amanda, I think that's like a little girl. It's not a little girl. It's a 35-year-old woman."
Yeah.
And now little girls are like Charlotte.
Or no, it's like Skylar, Bella or whatever.
I mean, the names that we picked for our kids both showed up in the top 10 most popular names for boys. I was like, all right, we'll do that, but whatever.
I think J names are just hot. I think that's really what it is.
They are.
J names are hot.
I mean, I got the name Justin only because Jason was like too popular at the time.
Mm.
Yeah. So my mom was like, Justin.
Did I ever tell you the weird story to my name?
What?
So like my dad had a terrible concept for a name for me. He wanted to name me Czar, which is a terrible name.
C-Z-A-R?
Like
the Czar
like
of Russia?
Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly
like,
what I'm
thinking. And my mom was like, you're on drugs, and that's not happening. So then she was like, if he has brown hair, he'll be Anthony. If he has blonde hair, he'll be Justin. And there it is.
Nice.
So now I'm Justin Anthony. What's up?
Wow.
Anthony Justin would have been terrible.
Anthony. That would have been...
Something different, right?
Definitely would have been different.
Andy, that's why Tiffany calls me Just Stone. Like Antone.
Justin Anthony.
Yeah.
Anthem?
Antone.
A terrible game.
No, Antone. You know?
Anton? Anton's a name. Is that Anthony?
No,
short?
Antone. Antone.
Is Antone a name?
It's like a slang way of saying Anthony.
Oh, I didn't know it. I did not know that.
Yeah. And Just Stone.
I know Tony is.
What's up?
I know Tony is,
Anthony.
Yeah, the big problem with Anthony is not a good nickname for it, unless you want to be Tony, which is a completely different name than Anthony.
Anthony's
totally
kind
not
of,
the same name.
Like, and no shade to any Anthony's out there, but, like, Anthony is kind of like a, it's kind of a bitch name.
Oh my god. You're being recorded, yeah. Son. What's wrong with you?
Anthony.
Just alienating our prime worst, target audience.
I'm saying this because
his middle name is Anthony.
So well, that's what I mean. Out. So it's like, this is a hill I can stand on. This is a hill I can stand on.
Fuck you.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
No, we all know the Justins are top tier.
Yeah. Just so that's why I didn't want to pick a name that my kids would have to then live with my decisions.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear that.
And be specifically unique. Like Czar.
Allie hard shut down one name that I had for James. I like the name Sev. I think the name Sev is kind of cool. But she was like, no. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd probably veto.
I think everyone gets... I think in the name... The kid name game, each parent gets at least one hard veto.
I kind of think you get infinite vetoes.
You get infinite vetoes?
Like, if you're both...
Yeah, you can't gamify this. This is your child.
Like, if I come to you with a name, and I'm like, I kind of like this name, and the other person's like, oh, I hate that name. Like,
yeah.
What am I going to talk him into loving our kid's name? That's not... Like, it'd be one thing if it's like, I don't love it, but, like, let's put it on the table.
Well, what I mean is, like, in the context of, like... No, but I really love this game. I realize you don't like it, but I really love this.
Nope.
You know?
If one person starts from a point of, I don't like it. Like, I don't think you can... I don't know if you can come back.
The girl name that Allie and I have pocketed, when she initially said it, I was like, I don't know if I like this. And she was like...
See, that's different from actively don't like that name.
Yeah.
I have a couple names that I have
like
written down.
The name... Like, Luke, Jason was like, I don't know... Like
Skywalker.
Like I pitched because his full name is Lucas, and he's like, I like Luke, but I don't think I like Lucas. And I was like, all right, well let's leave it on the board and like we'll discuss it.
Yeah.
And so then I talked him into it, but only because he started from a place of like I like Luke, so like where can we go with that?
Mm. What's the list of names you have?
I had some of them came from video games. Heidegger, thought that would be dope. Philosopher, German. Nefeli came from Elden Ring, and I was like, Nefeli's a cool name. I like that for a girl. Mm. Or Leah, or Talia, or Lottie. I thought that was pretty good. And
Lottie
I was like,
is short for Charlotte.
Well, fuck. I didn't know that.
Fun fact.
I also like Charlotte, actually.
Charlotte is a cool name.
I like Charlotte.
That's like a proper like girl name, yeah, you know what I mean? Like,
I like Lottie because it's like cute. But then I was like, if you ever name them Destiny, and they ever have children. Oh,
they're Destiny's children?
They're Destiny's children. That would be fantastic for the joke. It would just... Cost me 40 years, but yeah. I can make it happen.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway.
We're still pocketing the girl name. The girl name is like, that's sacred for us.
No,
it's not going to be Gwen. Although Gwen will probably...
Are you releasing Gwen?
Well...
Because I'll have Gwen.
Allie and I agreed upon a different name, where we're like, if we have a girl, this is the name.
We'll never know.
Yeah, first you have to have another child. Yeah.
Gwen,
step one, get pregnant.
Gwen will likely be the middle name, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah, I love the name Gwen. I think Gwen is like the best name.
I'm going to name all my children after name. Your siblings.
What's that?
It's going to be hilarious.
Yeah.
There's going to be Justin, a Frank, and a Tiff. Be hilarious.
Wow. That would be so weird. All right.
Yeah.
Let's get into the games. Liz, what have you been playing? You're done with Final Fantasy. It's over.
Finished Final Fantasy.
Pin is in.
Yeah. So, I mean, we could probably skip me because we're back on Baldur's Gate.
Nice.
And that's Baldur's all I've played.
But you haven't found a new... Trist?
No. Honestly, like, I feel like I need to detox.
I hear that.
After spending, and I mean, I...
Jeez, Liz, read a
book.
I feel
like I played... I've actually been making Jax a baby blanket.
You didn't even do everything, and you got over 110 that's 120 hours. I don't understand how that's possible. I did everything, well, most of the time, and I spent 134 hours.
That's why I said, like, I feel like, I think I... There were a few days where, like... I started playing at 8 a.m. and then I left it on for 4 hours.
Yeah.
Played again a little bit and then like left it on for another 4 hours. So there's like a good 8 hours a few times that I wasn't playing. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Definitely. That always happens to me. Because you're like, yeah, you're working, the kids are something, you know. Because I also was playing before work and then I was not working.
And then I would have
some sort of like idea that I'm going to come back to it, and then I wouldn't, and so then I would just be on for four hours.
Yeah.
And then I would play at lunch.
I am in the final throes of Final Fantasy, and I'm like really like happy to be where I am right now. Basically, it's like I'm on Rulers of the Outer Worlds, which is like notoriously the hardest thing to do in the game, and I'm absolutely copying this build. Online, we were playing it a little bit before the podcast started, And it's really just like random at this point. It's like the build works. The build does exactly what it's supposed to do. I just got to get lucky on that last fight. That last fight is absolute bullshit. But if I can do it, then it'll be
good. So how many total hours have you put in both playthroughs now?
So it's the same file. And I just said I just cracked 134. And I'm on chapter 12 of the hard mode playthrough. So that's pretty much just going to be like a pretty quick stretch to the end, except for last area of the game, which thinking back to those puzzles, I'm not really excited about doing those.
Right.
Specifically the Aerith stuff. Like, I just didn't really find much joy in that. Although I will say, in the hard mode playthrough, it really does require you to adjust your builds for specific fights.
Right.
And that has been actually really cool. Like, some specific fights in that game are, like, weirdly hard for no reason. I mean, some of them are, like, you know, basically, the entire Caitlyn section is just stupid. Like, nobody wants to fight as just Caitlyn and nobody else. Like, that just sucks. But there are some individual fights that have, like, I would say eclipsed much of what I've done in the first playthrough of the game. It's a weird one, specifically the fight with the final fight with Roche was awesome. Like, the 1v1 with Cloud.
Yeah.
That was probably one of the coolest fights that I've been in this game so far. I mean, I feel like that was a
good fight. In normal mode.
It was cool in the moment, but it is very different and very hard on hard mode.
What about Rufus?
I mean, I thought it was kind of hard on normal mode. There's a chance I was a little underleveled because I wasn't doing everything.
Yeah. I'm about to fight Rufus. I haven't fought Rufus yet.
Okay.
Yeah, that's... I haven't, like... I'm in chapter 12, but I haven't gotten a gold saucer yet.
Yeah. I do kind of want to play the ending again because I was pretty underleveled the last fight, and so, like, it was a little annoying.
Struggle.
Yeah, it was a little... Yeah. I had to fight... Like, when you were like, I started over from the beginning and I wasted 2 hours, I probably spent 2 hours just restarting the Sephiroth fight at the end. And I was like, I could have just restarted this whole fight and actually put appropriate material on everybody and probably gotten through it faster.
Having, like, fully leveled materia is a total game changer. It really does completely change the way the game plays.
Yeah, I'm a little annoyed that I never leveled up my, like, fire and blizzard materia all the way.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's actually
I always had it on.
Very easy to get those to max level. That's
fire
shocking.
Fire and Blizzard.
No, the combined one.
Oh, the combined ones take a while.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The separate ones, yes. I had.
You know where
are you playing the game?
You know where the grinding spot is at the end of the game?
No.
That makes it go real fast?
Hit it.
Area outside the mansion? That's what I saw.
It's like two spots in Gungaga. It's like you go there, there's like two sets of three enemies that like... If you put the Chocobo armlet on, that's 3x AP, and then you put an AP up on there, so that's 6x AP, you can level like any materia so fast.
That's
like
good to know.
So fast. And you literally just loop these two circles.
I'm never gonna go back there. So
and
there
it just
good to know.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great.
That's cool.
Maybe the listeners will use that information.
Honestly, I'm looking forward to being done at this point. This Friday, Stellar Blade comes out.
Friday?
Wow. Yeah, so I've got that pre-ordered. I'm like ready to go. I'm actually amped for that game.
You got a lot of stuff in your
The queue is
queue.
Deep. Although Stellar Blade, I've heard, is only 25 hours, which I'm like, holy shit, that sounds like a dream right now.
25 hours is a lot of time.
That's not that much time. It's not 134 hours.
Yeah, but 130 hours is an absurd amount of time.
Yeah.
In fact, that's like, what, 5 25-hour games?
Do you know what's nuts? Like, yeah, I thought about this,
a tight game is like a 12-hour game. Yeah. That's like a tight game. Like, 25-hour game, like, that's like a...
It's still a bit of a commitment.
Yeah, that's still...
Get
I would
that
say
done in a day.
I thought about it this way. It's like it's almost May, right? Final Fantasy VII came out in mid February.
Yeah, I know.
Like, that's how long this game has had a grip on our collective lives.
Wow.
I literally lost like a month and a half to one game, which is crazy to me.
Do you think the next game's gonna be just as long?
I don't know.
I think it's gonna be I'm hoping it's shorter.
No, they'll probably see this and be like, I've heard that the game Final Fantasy VII, I mean, maybe this is just Square's like strategy, but they've been saying like it's not selling well.
I'll give you
like,
two.
Because they also said Final Fantasy XVI didn't sell or meet expectations either.
I'll give you two good reasons why Rebirth's not selling well. Number one, it's a sequel, so it's definitely going to sell less than the original. And two, it only came out on PS5, whereas Final Fantasy VII came out on PS4, and it was like late stage PS4, so the amount of potential players was just way, way higher then.
Yeah, that's what they said about 16 too, though. 16 as well.
Yeah, 16 sold well, but then it didn't meet expectations, which is like, what?
16, like, remove one additional year of PS5 owners. Yeah, and you've got where Final Fantasy 16 came out.
That's what I gotta get through.
I have been seeing...
In Japan, the game was the highest selling new release during its first week.
Wow. So I have been seeing some incredible feedback about the Leviathan DLC in 16.
What have you been hearing?
I've heard some of the set pieces are some of the most ridiculous set pieces that we've ever seen.
When you say set pieces, you mean like
boss fights? Like area settings, boss fights, like, you know, like the whole construction of it. Like, I saw a screenshot of one thing and then I read what it was because it didn't look like what it said it was. And then I was like, holy shit, like, that's probably amazing. So I won't spoil it, but it's, I am very activated to
you
play
should
that.
Finish. When is the original game?
I feel like I should wait till the DLC to finish the game.
Frankly, well, the DLC's out.
It's out already.
Yeah, all of it's out.
Oh, maybe that's what it
looks like. Honestly, I would probably wait until, and this is a stretch, I'd probably wait until PS5 Pro comes out.
No, but I have to do it before we go to the orchestra. So.
Yeah, what? That's like forever away.
That's probably fall.
Yeah, it's like at least 6 months away.
Yeah.
That's like, how am I going to survive that long?
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
Don't wait that long.
Yeah, you should just play it. Yeah.
You should play it.
I am.
I would go back and play. You've already waited a
year. You've had enough time.
Yeah.
It's over.
I will go back. I will buy that deal.
Then you can do the Hardbone playthrough or the Final Fantasy playthrough on PS5 Pro. And I bet you it'll be amazing.
Will you play?
Huh?
What if you make you a bet and will you play?
Yeah. I need motivation. But I will say I have been pretty knee deep in, and by knee deep I mean only like 3 hours, so like whatever. But like pretty knee deep into Overcorn Overlord, you know what I'm saying?
Unicorn Overlord.
Okay, so actually being able to like sink into this game a little bit, I will say that this is quite possibly a fantastic game, primarily because because
the 3 hour review.
This is what I've understood so far, and I see the lines in the code. I love Final Fantasy Tactics. Like, specifically, right?
Right.
For a lot of reasons. This game basically takes a lot of the strategy elements in that game, but then they add on kind of, like, advanced wars. They kind of add on a little bit more of, like, the Fire Emblem, like, rock, paper, scissors, shoot kind of situation. They add on a little tower defense. And all these things work so fascinatingly as an advanced tactics game. Like, a game where it's actually evolving the platform, like the genre.
Yeah.
It's changing it. So to the point where it's like, now you're moving units on a larger scale as you would before, but they're all party centric, and each of the party members themselves, depending on where you place them in this 2x3 row, like six boxes, also depends on how you fight in correlation to other enemies. And each of the enemies, you have to look and think about like their amalgamation of their formation and the players in them in order to counter them or get countered. And it's fascinating because now you also play on two levels, which is one on like a, you know, like a putting your characters in specific spots and like almost like a tower defense, because it does require you to like take into consideration the movement speed of certain units and, you know, the positioning on the map. But then when you get into the fights, then it breaks it down into an entirely different game, which is like, okay, so you kind of built this deck in a specific way where these characters are in these spots. What's that going to be like against these guys in these spots? And the game also does a really good job of like explaining things to you when new units are like given to you by letting you like train against these characters. So it's like, these are the characters and this is where they'll be in this formation. How would you answer that? And it's like, well, let's take one of your formations and throw it against there. And it's like a quick 2 minute, like 2 second thing where you get to see how it plays out. And then you're like, oh, okay. So it plays out this way. I would adjust my character.
You're
like
doing this in battle or like,
no, this is,
you're doing this
is
as like a tutorial.
It's like, after you, so like, man, this isn't in battle. This is all before battle, right?
Mm.
The before battle is fascinating because it's literally like an overworld map where you're walking around kind of like, I would say almost like an Octopath Traveler. You're like literally, or a Triangle Strategy, where you're walking around town and you're seeing these things, except for you're seeing it where you're walking around the main world and you're liberating different towns, and then the towns offer up different equipment and you can station your guards there that do different things. Very fascinating. But it's like, as you're doing this, you're like taking over forts, and then you're getting new classes of characters that join your party, all of which the story is really interesting. Well, it's sort of interesting. I'll get to that in a second. And I'll tell you about it in a little bit. But like, as you liberate some of these like fortresses and stuff, some of the characters of the new classes will be out there and be like, hey, so this is my strengths and these are my weaknesses. Like, play me real quick, and then you'll see how your characters fight against their characters.
That's kind of cool.
And it teaches you how this...
So it's like kind of organic. Like,
it is. They built it into it, which is really nice. So as you're going through...
Do you get like experience or something for doing that, or it's just like a conversation?
It's just a conversation. And it's also like, well, you can change up your strategy and your formation and then test it out against them again and see how it would work, right?
Gotcha.
So like, in certain aspects, it's like, if you have thieves are really fast. If you put them on the front line, they'll be attacked first. They have two... dodges. So like if you have this strong melee character come in, it'll dodge one, taking away their attacks, and then you can come in with another move. But they're really weak, so after the two dodges, if the enemy has more, or an archer, which is a hard counter to the spy or the thief, they'll pretty much immediately be dead, and you have to worry about that.
Gotcha.
There's no like permadeath, which I'm both kind of happy about and kind of sad about. The strategy elements are very tight, which is very, very nice. The story is interesting because it's basically, and if I was to give you kind of like a quick background in these 3 hours that I've played so far, it's so far you're some long lost prince of a prologue that happened in the beginning, and now you're coming back to kind of like right the wrongs and like save your people.
Mm. Okay.
And all the people that was once on your side. Is no longer on your side because somehow they've been persuaded by the enemy to fight against your cause. But then you realize they are all under magic spells. So like you can just, boop, I beat you. You're part of my team now. Oh, I'm so glad you're here. And that's what's happening. And I'm like, that part is like a little like, all right. He's got like this cool ring from his mom that allows him to like dispel this like thing. And it's like, all right, whatever.
Okay. But
so far, very good. The tactics element of it, very tight. Justin, there's a lot of unit management. unit management where you're equipping each of the individual units. And
how are you with the tactics games in general?
Very hit or miss. Yeah. You know, it's
like Fire Emblem was fine.
Yeah, hit or miss is pretty much exactly what it is. Like, love Advance Wars, love Fire Emblem, did not like Tactics. I'm trying to think of what other ones I've played.
Advanced Tactics? Tactics Advance on
Tactics Advance I played for a little bit. Ogre Battle I played for a minute. Yeah, it just depends, you know? It's like, if the flavor hits me right, then it's not a big deal.
This feels like Final Fantasy Tactics without you being able to change the classes, but with additional rule sets of strengths and weaknesses, and then understanding these particular characters. Like, there's also an element where if you make a unit a leader of a formation, then they changes their movement and also changes their abilities of the formation.
This sounds like it, like the weaknesses, strengths, and weaknesses sounds sort of Fire Emblem to me.
Yes.
And if it's like swapping out like weapons and stuff, that's also kind of Fire Emblem, so I'm cool there. And it sounds like it's just like one or two extra ticks of complexity on top of that.
And the one little add-on, which I thought was kind of cool, is it's not one character versus another character. It's a group of the characters and the dimensions that you like... and the aspects of each of the characters that create the dimensions of this party that's moving, which is the unit.
Gotcha.
And it acts in a very similar way of like Advance Wars, where you're coming against the two opposing forces and you see how they fight each other.
They scuffle,
like some characters will heal characters at the end of a fight. Some characters will like attack twice, so on and so forth. So it's like, okay. Can I like DPS them down hard enough so that they can attack, or are they a hard counter that my two characters will be dead and I have to retreat back to like... a town in order for them to like regain health back and then come back out. Then you add them. Then you add items and equipments. So overall, there's a lot of really cool intricacies, and the classes are being delivered to you pretty quickly in the first 3 hours. So I imagine like right now I'm in the learning curve for me right now is being able to discern what units are on the field and what units to put up first in order to take them out fast enough without expending additional resources that would make me slower to like invade.
Yeah.
Which has been really interesting. So the push and pull there is really fun. And as I'm getting to learn this, it's been really interesting. And then the overworld map side part of it, which is like part kind of like collecting resources and then bringing back to town to deliver for these quests that then liberates the town and advances them and like builds their town back up, which then helps you in a larger way. That part's interesting. And then also meeting all the characters. And then I would say like the one thing that I really do like is that they do take their time with each of the individual characters that you're meeting. And they do give you like a how did this person end up in the war? And like, where have they been? You know, and now they're part of your team. And what does that mean? You know, like, how do they regard your other teammates? And that's been fun.
And to see all that draped in that vanilla wear aesthetic, it's like, I'm here for that. You know,
and the vanilla wear aesthetic is good. Like, I really enjoy the scenes where everybody's like talking and they're expressing, like, it all feels very good in their like cool diorama sets and their weird, like, almost like Paper Mario like movements. It's like interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that game's been really good. And then I did buy Nier Automata for on sale like maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I loaded that up and I played that for the first like 5 or so hours. I understand now.
You never played Nier Automata?
I never played it before. Wow. And I totally understand what you guys are talking about. It's such a like a pretty not sure one trick copy. Pony game. It's like there's so many things going on and it's constantly like subverting expectations in such fascinating and fantastic ways.
Yeah, dude.
That game is that as being super special and really, really cool.
So oh my gosh, yeah. That man.
The game is lovely.
Like there's so much of a ride in front of you. It's so
Do you know like what happens at the end?
I'm trying not to think about it, but I think I know something about some save file thing, and I know there's a lot of fourth wall breaking moments, which I am very excited for. I got to the open world part, and that part we're doing like some of the questing stuff, and like I tried fishing and I was like, what is this for? Like as I'm going through this, I'm like, part of me is like, okay, I'm still coming off of Final Fantasy 7, we should play Unicorn Overlord instead. So
the only like pretext I would say is like just keep going, and like when the game's done, the game's not done.
I figure
like that's pretty much it.
I mean, I feel like they introduced that in the very beginning when you're like, oh, they're dead now, and then it's like, well, they're not dead.
I also didn't realize like you know there's like whatever 26 different endings that you can do.
Way more than that, but
there are. I thought the whole point was that there was one for every letter.
There's one for every letter, and then it doubles up at a certain point. It's ridiculous. But like the context of the endings is stupid.
How much
like,
is that game if you want
but some of the endings are like nothing, right?
They're nothing.
Ending I got that was like an optional ending was I took the main ship out.
I did that. I sold the main ship, and that was another ending. There's like a chip in your brain that's like your brain, and it's like if you unequip it, you instantly die.
And it says like don't unequip or you'll die, and I'm like, that's really
it's like no though. And I'm like, but I could get like 5,000 gold for this, and then I sell it, and then it was like ending is like you decided to, you know, like remove your chip and
the as world, soon as you remove it, like,
dies did that have
like the screen turns black and I'm like, oh, I'm really dead. I thought like, oh, I'll die and then like I'll see then, myself laying
and then
there.
On your
like,
save file, it'll say ending achieved, ending ZA or something.
Yeah. Does it have like a Undertale like long lasting effect when you reboot the game up?
Just keep playing the game.
All right. Well,
not that one. I don't think.
Yeah, just keep playing the game. Not taking your chip out.
Like if you want to take your chip out, you could take your chip out. It won't impact your game. If you want to see it,
you might lose some progress.
Save right beforehand.
All right. That's cool.
Yeah.
The game seems fun. I really like the movement of it and the aesthetics of it and like the overall like feeling of this like something else is going on is really nice. But yeah, I'll get into that in a second. I feel like I need to jump into Final Fantasy 16 as well.
So. Yeah. Also, the music is absolutely sublime. Sublime in that game. It's like some of the best game music like of all time.
Yeah.
If you want to hear me wax poetic about it, you should search Nier Automata VG Vinyl on YouTube. I made a YouTube video about that one time.
Nice.
Yeah. If you're going to play Final Fantasy 16, just like you don't... there's a lot of stuff to do. You don't have to do all the stuff. Just play the main story.
Are you sure?
Yes. Choose joy.
She's wrong.
Collect
all the sand.
All those side missions are nothing.
All of them?
All of them.
All right. All right. Okay.
All
right.
They are all go to a person. The person says, I need this thing. You go to an area. You fight a group of things. You pick up that thing and you go back.
I'll put this out there. You know, we were talking about side quests before and I was saying Final Fantasy VII Rebirth gets a pass or like it's a passing grade. 16 does not get a passing grade. It does not.
All right.
Its main story far, far outshines what goes on there, but side quests are not additive.
You know.
They are
getting the leather for the weaponsmiths to make better weapons. That's not worth
they
it.
and they can live without it.
Yeah, all right.
They can all live right. without it.
All right, understood.
They are we'll nothing. Do. You we'll know, do. You get like at some point, because also at some point from the beginning, you get like a ton of side quests, and none of them give you anything good.
Yeah,
and you also have at that point, you have like infinite money. You have all the weapons you need, so you don't need to buy anything. You have like a million potions, and so you're like, I'm literally just doing this to go through the motions,
I'd say,
check this box. I'm getting nothing from this.
The bounty board is cool. Do the bounties. Those are fun.
Yeah, the bounties would be fun.
Bounties are interesting.
Yeah.
All right, I'll get back into Final Fantasy 16.
Big bosses.
That's what I mean. And if you skip those side things, I mean, then you're just cruising. Yeah. Like, you could finish that game very quickly.
Cool.
Actually, you still have quite a bit left, but much faster than.
I'm actually amped that you're playing Nier Automata. That game is like...
Dude, I'm...
It's on a different level. That game was like borderline life-changing.
Yeah.
When it started... It's
one of the greatest games of all time.
Yeah, when it's... When it started,
where did I put that on the list?
I don't know. It's on your list.
Is it not?
I'm thinking about it. I don't think it's on my list.
I might have fucked up.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry. You were saying.
No, I was just when it opened up to the shmup part of the game, I was very blown away.
Yeah.
I was like, this is.
And all of a sudden, you're doing this now.
Yeah. And then what? I'm behind the plane now. Yeah. What? Now I'm out of the plane.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was wild. Anyway, let's go.
Yeah. One of the quotes that I had in that VG Vinyl review is. I was saying that it kind of like it sort of bends our perception of what games can be and constantly evolves with the player in an ever changing gamescape. And that was the first time I used the word gamescape. And I was like, that totally is the appropriate word for this.
I do like the idea of people using, and this is what I think Kojima is trying so hard to do, but I feel like personally I'm not understanding it. It's the idea of using video games as the canvas and the platform to like kind of create some interesting dance with the audience in the game, like because like
that is what Nier and Nier Automata do.
Yeah,
right.
Well, 100%.
I see 100% what you're talking about.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's just like surprised me. Like I'm here holding a controller,
interacting with the games in a different way than just picking it up.
Nier Automata
leveling up. Like that's
I mean, like he did it. Kojima did it with like which one?
When you switch to the controller.
Yeah. I was gonna say Nier Automata might be the best example of that since the Psycho Mantis fight.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
right,
dude. I see you like to play Castlevania.
Yeah. Yes. You know, the first time I did that was on the GameCube version.
Really?
And it's like, you like playing Super Mario Sunshine.
No way. They had a voice for that?
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
It's a weird thing. Yeah. That was a moment.
Right? I feel like they'd have to code a bunch of different... Not code. Record a bunch of different...
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I think they do get different voice actors for that one.
There's only so many games, and they're like, what's the biggest hitting games? Obviously, if they didn't play that game, they wouldn't say it, so it would still be surprising.
I guess. I actually didn't know that happened, because I never played that game.
All right, guys, we're going to rapid fire through some news.
Okay.
Hit me.
How's that sound?
Yeah.
Okay, so we have three topics for this week. We're going to cover RPGs and racing games. Isn't that exciting?
Yep.
First, RPG bit of news that we got. So from Atlus and Sega, Metaphor ReFantazio, the new game from the Persona people. Hmm. That game got a release date. It's going to be October 11th of this year. People are very excited.
It's like, what's the game called?
Metaphor ReFantazio.
Metaphor Re, like
in this is a, this to, is a like, game that looks like Re Fantazio, but if you just type in Metaphor, you'll find it. It is a game from the Persona creators. It looks exactly like Persona meets Shin Megami Tensei type thing.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's like they get the same artist for every game.
I think they do. I remember this trailer had very bad very bad frame rate during certain segments of it. And I was like, interesting. But people are amped for it. The thing is like from this developer, I've never really gotten much out of their other games. Like I've never really been attracted by like Shin Megami Tensei.
Yeah.
Outside of Shin Megami Tensei 3, which I think we've talked about before.
We have.
Dude, the UI looks exactly like Persona 5.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Exactly like Persona 5.
Yeah, so...
That's just Persona.
Yeah, right. Yeah, with splashier colors and stuff. Anyway.
Yeah, so it's an exciting thing.
People like them.
I mean, you like Persona.
I do, but, like, this is weird.
It's just Persona.
Where's the dating part?
Yeah, does it have a dating sim in it?
I'm certain you'll be dating some kind of creature and or spirit animal. Who knows?
I do like spirit animals. All right. I mean, I don't know. If I was to play a Persona game, it would most likely be Persona 3 that I own and haven't played yet. So, like,
that's true.
But when is that mood going to strike? Eventually it will. Same for Resident Evil 4.
Yeah, after Unicorn Overlord and Resident Evil 4 and Final Fantasy 16. Can't believe you never played Resident Evil 4.
I know.
We split it.
That's such a good game. I wish I was you. I wish I was you.
Right? And you could experience
that was my game of the year last year.
First time.
I wish I were you right now, because then you get to do that for the first time. My God.
See, and this is why I wanted to play it first.
I knew.
You did the right thing.
Yeah, totally.
Trust me, I know Star Wars is still on the list. It's right there. Like, I know it's right there.
It is right there.
That's getting a DLC soon, right?
Star Wars?
Yeah.
No, it's coming to EA Play or something. All right. Next bit of news. This is basically exclusively interesting, I think, to me, because I love Wipeout a lot. One of the co-creators of the Wipeout series, his name is Nick Burkholm. He is joining a studio, or he's basically co-creating a studio with a guy from Skate, like the Skate franchise.
Okay.
The headline says, Wipeout co-creator Nick Burkholm is making a futuristic sports title at a new development studio called Starlight Games. And they have this like really short, like 10-second teaser, 30-second teaser that just shows like characters in futuristic looking outfits. There's no information about it, like what it is or anything about it, but I'm just amped that somebody that's involved in Wipeout is doing something.
Yeah.
Because
Wipeout and Skate? I mean, that's an interesting combination.
That is like
speed. Fast.
The
thing that kills me is like
an X Games video game.
Sony is like notorious for like Sony's closed a lot of studios that are like underperforming and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And when they closed Studio Liverpool, that was like really, really sad to me. I was like, damn.
What'd they make?
Studio Liverpool?
Yeah.
Wipeout. They were just Wipeout. Like that was their whole thing. Wipeout was originally made by Psygnosis, and then Psygnosis basically spun off and created Studio Liverpool, which was like a Sony owned like first party studio, and all they made was Wipeout. And I mean, they killed it on Wipeout HD, and then they made Omega Collection afterwards, which was less good. And then they experimented with a couple of different titles with like 2048, and they did that like weird like small launch mobile game, and it just didn't work out, so they ended up closing them, which sucks. But like, they never really got to hit that like AAA peak again. Yeah. That was Wipeout HD, you know.
How could they make the Wipeout formula better and more interesting for people?
The shame is that like Sony still owns that IP, so they could it's like Sony still owns that IP, so they could do something with it if they found the right, you know, suitor. But yeah, I don't know. New studio, Starlight Games.
I feel like we don't see many futuristic racing games recently or at all. It's always racing sim games that seem to be taking the spotlight nowadays.
Yeah, the futuristic racers kind of took a backseat. There were a couple of indie games that like made some waves, like Redout and Fast RMX and stuff like that.
Yeah, but like even the kart genre, I feel like, isn't really like popping off nowadays.
Not really. Yeah, they kind of like, you know, I mean? Like arcade racers, just in general. Yeah, not so much.
Some of the indie side has done interesting things with like the arcade racing like genre, but like if we're talking about like the kart, like, you know, mod racers or like Diddy Kong Racing or Mario Kart, obviously, like
it's basically like Mario Kart
Sonic
8
racers
has, like,
I guess is like
Racing Transformed, which is supposed to be good. I've never played those games, but I've heard they were quite good.
I like don't play those on principle, I feel.
Yeah, it's like I won't be part of the problem.
Yeah, I know, but that's a problem, that it's a problem anyway.
Yeah, so exciting to see. What do we think of the name of this studio, Starlight Games? I love that, I like it.
Yeah, I hope they make cool shirts.
It's like, they're...
I can't believe it's not... It doesn't exist already.
Right?
Starlight? Yeah, right?
It's a cool logo, too. I'm down.
Actually, there's a... We should have a break... All right, one podcast, we should just come with a list of names of game studios, both alive and dead.
Yeah.
And just rate their names.
I'm totally down for that.
That sounds like such a fun
thing. Totally down for that.
Also,
there's some bad ones.
This A is a Star Trek A.
Yeah, fully.
Totally ripped
right from Star Trek.
Wow.
Yeah, probably the worst named studio right now is there's a Sony first party studio called That's No Moon Games.
That's No Moon.
And they're not making a Star Wars game. It's like the dumbest fucking name I've ever heard.
Oh, is that what they... Yeah.
That's that it's 100% referencing a Star Wars name.
Yeah.
That's No Moon. That's the name of your studio's name is That's No Moon.
Maybe they're shooting for the stars to get a Star Wars license deal. I mean,
which is also not to be confused. You don't make
a studio thinking that you're going to make a Star Wars game.
Also not to be confused with another studio called Ballistic Moon, which is another terrible name.
Yeah.
That's not great either.
Yeah, bad names.
Ballistic, I don't love Ballistic.
Anyway, Starlight Games. Especially with like a lean towards these games are going to be fast. Like, I see what you're putting down, you know? Yeah. I like that.
What about Daylight Basement Studios?
We know those guys.
Yeah, I know.
They're friends of ours.
All right.
It's not a great name.
Okay, final news story.
Okay.
You know, there's some people that on their podcast, they'll edit them to edit out all of the uhs and likes.
And the breaths and stuff. Yeah.
Wow.
We're never going to do that.
Yeah, I was watching.
I would love to buy an AI that would do that for us.
I mean, that's a lot.
It's a lot of micro cuts.
A lot of editing, yeah.
I remember listening to Bob Wolf's YouTuber. He had like a Origins video or something, like his 100, 200, 400 subscriber video. And he talked about, or rather, no, he introduced one of his editors who then talked about literally scraping all the audio for those particular
moments.
Where you hear I'm pretty sure the podcast, I'm pretty sure they do it on Last Stand Media too.
Yeah, they did. Because
you never hear anything other than just the words that are coming out. And it makes it so silky smooth and pure.
Yeah, it's nice to listen to that stuff. But then you look at stuff like Rogan's podcast.
Yeah.
And they say odd words here and there, but for the most part, they're so trained.
Yeah.
That this is how you speak when you're on a microphone.
I have the headphones on. I feel like headphones probably changed the game.
It will fix any breathiness issues for sure.
Hear it, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that's specific to audio only podcasts. Because some video, you can't edit out all the ums in a video podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did we get here? Audio?
I said as I was transitioning topics really loudly and...
What are we doing?
I created a large break in the... there it is again. Okay, final topic for this evening. You all know Baldur's Gate 3? You ever heard of that game?
We do.
I do know
that. We haven't finished it yet.
So, developer...
But we're getting close, I think.
I think we are.
I think
we're have you played that for more than Final Fantasy VII?
Definitely, I think. Yeah.
Maybe.
Definitely, I think.
Would you go and play a second time? Would you go for a second playthrough?
Yeah, I would.
Not immediately.
I feel like I don't know what's going on so hard that I would definitely do that because none of this is going to stick. I don't know what's going on.
Did you feel a little better after we explained it, or was it too much?
A little better, but it's not even about you. It's about me. Okay, let's go on.
I feel like you'll understand more when we get to the next big story section.
Yeah.
Like when we meet Ball, that's what we're about to do or whatever. And
who's Ball?
Ball is one of the people controlling the brain. Or right. Does she... No. She worships... One of the people controlling the brain worships
Justin, your
the god
point
Ball.
Was made.
It's fine.
Your point was made.
It's fine. I appreciate and I'm having fun.
But
I would play again.
I heard a interesting perspective about exactly what we're talking about now, where it seems like more recently, and I know that this is true for myself, that games just kind of run through you at a certain point, where it's kind of hard to remember what happens in certain games, beat for beat, or characters' names or anything like that. Do you remember who the final boss was of Star Wars Jedi Survivor?
Darth Vader.
You're right.
I don't remember his name.
You know, so Sidelfus. If you asked me what happened in the first God of War, God of War 2016,
but I know what happened. I definitely know what happened in Jedi. I could tell you what happens.
Yeah, I feel my memory.
Sorry,
is
God of War.
Very gone. Yeah, the first God of War, 2016. Don't remember.
You don't remember who the final boss was?
Nope.
Wasn't it?
I remember
God. It was not Zeus.
Yeah, that one. Perfect for the audio listeners. Yeah,
Zeus's son, or not Zeus's son.
Balder.
What's his face's
son? Balder.
Balder.
Yeah.
Balder, yeah.
Yep.
And then She's like, don't kill my son. And you're like, fuck you, lady.
Freya,
And then Freya's like, no. And then she's like, I'm mad at you. And then the next game, she's like, I'm your best friend again.
Mm. Yeah, I guess.
Because Atreus.
I guess
we gotta raise this boy together.
And then Odin was the second game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember Odin. But oh, that was more recent memory.
Definitely having problems mostly every day.
I don't know. I feel like I have a good... A
Where am I right now?
Well, how did I get here? Who are you people?
I feel like I experienced that with shows. But games, I play less games, and they feel like they can stick with me better.
I play way more games. I play a lot of games.
I feel like this is a very,
this might be a me-specific thing.
Yes.
I've also heard that, in respect to this, when you finish a game, it is easier to forget a game when you finish it versus a game that is unfinished.
Yeah.
Because if it's unfinished, then it leaves sort of this like lasting memory in your head where you're like, know what's going on.
It's like...
But if you close the book, then it's like, I don't need to think about this
anymore. It is actually a specific phenomenon that like, you know, that the Tetris graphic novel, comic book that my cousin wrote? Part in the book, he talks about how... when there's like some sort of psychology to when your brain closes out a task, it essentially needs to make room for new tasks. So subconsciously you will like throw that information away, and they like tested it out on, they tested it out by like, they were talking to like a waitress and they said like, oh, you know, what's my, they ordered a bunch of drinks and she didn't write them down and she goes to make them all and she brings them back. And then 3 minutes later they ask her like, oh, what did I order my last drink? And she's like, my last order. And she's like, I don't remember. And he's like, you were able to have all that information 3 minutes ago, enough to like go back to the bar, make all the drinks and bring them back to me. But then as soon as you brought them to me, like, it's
like,
gone.
Your brain's like, I'm done with this thought.
So that is why it's hard to remember games when you finish them. Yeah. It's because you're evolutionary predetermined to forget information when it is done.
I'm going to finish Rebirth.
Just part of the machine.
Yeah.
I'm going to pop that platinum and then it's going to be like, phew. What Final Fantasy Sephiroth. Game? And then I'll just be like, that game was great. Done. Now I'm playing Stellar Blade. And it's just all butts and boobs. Looking forward to it.
Do I remember what Elden Ring's about? I don't think anybody knows what that's about, even if they're playing it right now.
Yeah.
I can name you bosses from that game.
Yeah.
I can't name you a single character from that game.
Godric.
I mean, that's kind of what Baldur's Gate is.
Torin? What's the name of the horse? It starts with a T.
Epona. I don't remember it. I don't want to play this game.
Yeah.
I'm bad at it. I'm usually
pretty good at this game. Okay, last news story. Baldur's Gate 3. Studio Larian, developer of Baldur's Gate 3.
No longer making Baldur's Gate.
Is working on two new projects based on its own IP and believes that these will be the strongest games that they've worked on thus far.
They have to say that.
Yeah. Of course they're going to. Interesting. I mean, they have to think that in order to move away from
we are currently working on two new projects that we couldn't be more excited about what the future has in store.
Fable.
It's still the early days, but we'll tell you more about those down the line. But know that even as our focus turns to these new games, the sensibilities that brought you Baldur's Gate 3 are alive and well here at Larian.
Do you think it will be similar? Like, do you think it will be a CRPG? Like, similar?
Yeah. I think that if they have the systems in place, it would be a shame not to use them.
Right?
Yeah.
So this is what it says.
It's a spiritual successor.
This was the last, like,
but in space.
The key part of the quote.
I can do in space.
I don't know if we're going to pull it off, but looking at our narrative, visual, and gameplay plans, I think what we're working on will be our best work ever.
Prove it to me.
Yeah, I mean, they are, as we're saying this, and I'm like, I don't really know what's going on in Baldur's Gate, it is somehow still very narratively successful. Like, it's very confusing, and I don't have all the pieces sort of figured out, but they are coming together, and like, while you're watching it, it's very interesting.
See,
very
engaging. I've had this exact feeling many times, and I often chalk it up to, I feel like everyone else is just smarter than me.
I think that nobody... And because also, as we're playing Baldur's Gate again with Alex, like, there are some parts we get to where I'm like, Alex, like, is this right? And he's like, I don't know that I really knew either. Yeah. And he's on a second playthrough.
Fair enough.
So I think some of it is just confusing. But I mean, they do really have a way with creating, like, interesting dialogue, interesting characters and choices, and so that's true, like, that's all there, right? Oh, that's the sensibility that they created that game.
They clearly have the chops.
Yeah, I think one game is going to be a spiritual successor, in a sense, to Baldur's Gate 3, and then one thing will be totally different if they're creating two games. Mm. That's my gut.
Yeah, what other games have they made?
I don't know.
I was actually going to pull that up.
I'll look it up
just a moment ago. Yeah, it is interesting. I often wonder with developers if after, you know, they just went through making this, you know, fully narrative driven epic,
right?
Would you want to do that again? You know, do you have the juice in you to extract another like phenomenal story,
right?
You know, or do you want to do something that's more like, yeah, let's make an arcade racing game,
right? Like if you have, I feel like, if you use all those creative juices, you can't just make more juice. You got to wait for that to develop a little bit, right?
Yeah, let the tree grow back.
Yeah.
You know?
You got to take some time.
Yeah. So
you would think.
All their games, at least all the games that I'm seeing here, except for Kinetic Kick, and Kinetic Kick 2 have been very Dungeons & Dragons slash like, there's Divinity Original Sin 1 and 2. There's Divinity Dragon Commander. Beyond Divinity. It's all Divinity
stuff. I was going to say, so that's definitely an IP they own, so it's probably going to be Divinity Original Sin and 3 or something.
Looking at Divinity, Original Sin's 2, it's like, as I'm looking through this, it's like, that's a straight up the same character selection / creation screen.
Yeah, that's just Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, right, exactly. So it's like, you know, if you're going to stick within what you know and what you're good at and what your developers like making, then, you know, make a good game with a good story. I'm down to play it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, does Divinity Original Sin, like, is it... Divinity? Have they been successful games?
Divinity was... super successful.
Yeah, Original Sin and Original Sin 2 were pretty major.
Yeah, Alex played both of them.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of just looks like Baldur's Gate 3. And if it's... Yeah, I guess I don't know that much about them, which is surprising to me that, like... I just feel like Baldur's Gate kind of came out of nowhere, and looking at this, it didn't come out of nowhere.
No, right, exactly.
It came from this.
It was
like,
part of the plan.
Yeah, yeah, like, this is the outline. These are the bones of Baldur's Gate. Yeah.
Wizards owns Dungeons & Dragons, right? Wizards of the Coast or whatever?
Yes.
Right.
So then, if Wizards of the Coast owns... Do you think they came to Larian and they were like, yo, let's make a D&D game? And they're like, cool. And then, after all the success, they were like, yo, let's make a D&D 2 game. And they're like, okay. And they're like... But we want 60% of the profits, and they're like, right, we're not playing your game anymore.
So I'm pretty certain that Dungeons and Dragons is like an open license where it's like Wizards owns it, but it's the kind of thing where like you basically just have to like pitch a project to get access to it, and then they'll let you pay for them to use it.
So I understood. Okay, yeah, that sounds right. Because like people were also making campaigns that were becoming really popular, and then Wizard got backlash because they were asking for money for these campaigns that users would create.
That was so. Yes. So it's funny. The one time I've played Dungeons and Dragons, basically with any sort of seriousness, we were playing this weird like cyberpunk variant. Yeah. I don't know what it's called, but that was an unlicensed version of Pathfinder 4 or something.
Yeah.
And you could only buy the book from this like one random like Etsy guy who was like reprinting it. And then it found out that that guy got sued for printing the book because he was like making money off of this like iteration of Dungeons and Dragons for exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was called though, but it was good.
You got a lot of backlash because there was like, you're stifling creativity here for something, for a capitalism basically. But
yep.
Yeah.
Divinity Original Sin 2 has a 92 on Metacritic. So
there it is.
I just don't think, I guess commercially they're not as successful as they are.
Baldur's Gate was just a revolutionary.
Critically,
I think. Yeah, I think it was good marketing or something.
Yeah, like I just feel like it's so surprising that it just blew up.
I have to assume that it was more complex and it was breaking some batteries versus Divinity.
I mean, it definitely is an evolution of that.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like it has grown and is much an improvement, but
I mean
still.
Like Divinity wasn't really like an underground game. I was aware that Divinity was like fairly big, but it like Baldur's Gate 3, it's like when I looked at it I was like, this is just not it for me.
But that's what I mean. I feel like Baldur's Gate was able to convert people that were like, oh, those games aren't for me, and make them play it.
Yeah,
is that you
like
guys?
not to say that like it,
no, but is that like, is that you guys?
Yeah, like I wouldn't 100%. Have played
I looked
beforehand
at Divinity and I was not interested in it.
And
I looked
like
at Baldur's Gate and I was weirdly interested.
I mean, I'm only interested in it because they were like, this is the greatest game of all time. You have to play it. And I'm like, all right, well, that, you're telling me like this is game of the year.
So,
like,
that's good marketing.
What am I going to not?
That's good marketing that pulled you. What about you? Like, there something you saw that was like, was it? Because the acclaim preceding it is like they got it in the right hands of the right people that said the right things, you know?
I think for me, it was particularly...
It also came out with a console version. I don't know if...
Divinity
is it's a PC game.
Yeah.
I mean, now I own two copies of the game. But, like, I think that my original pull towards it was all the fanfare, and then also that it was, like, a D&D thing. When I heard it was, like, the closest thing to D&D on a console or in a video game that exists, I honestly was very interested in it. When I look at Divinity, like, it was never
pitched
in a way that it was like D&D. It was a CRPG.
You can throw fire at the oil and the oil lights on fire. I remember Alex shared that example and I'm like, that sounds cool, but like, okay.
Yeah.
You know,
but now if you put it in D&D world, suddenly like my understanding.
Well, that's where the marketing comes from. Because I think the message that I heard with Baldur's Gate is like, there are a million ways to do anything. And you can really sculpt the narrative the way that you want to.
Which
and
is
that,
true.
That kind of hit my ears differently where I was just like, ah, okay. Like, so this is that kind of game.
Yeah.
And like, that feels like D&D. When you say D&D, when you think about playing it, I feel like the first thing that comes to mind is like, sky's the limit with your imagination.
Yeah.
And so like, if that's what you're telling me you're going to be in a game, like that's
right.
A very enticing offer like, you're going to be able to play this game and you're going to like try these crazy things and play however you want and they're going to work.
Yeah.
And they do work. I mean, there are a million different ways that you can approach things. And it's nice to just be able to be like, I don't like this character. And I had this, we had this interaction and I was like, yeah, I like talk to this guy. And I think he's kind of a jerk, but like, I ended up talking about the situation, but I think he's kind of a jerk. So like, should we just kill him? I'm like, yeah, let's just kill him.
Yeah.
So we just were like, all right, Justin, attack him.
There you go. Yeah. It's a wrap.
Cause there was like, there's some stuff behind this wall. We assessed and I was like, nah, he's not a good guy.
He's
dead now.
Yeah. I'm still stuck on the marketing part because it is fascinating that was literally like the clincher here. I mean, obviously the access to consoles is a big piece too.
I think it's a big deal, yeah.
That is a very big piece, but I've always even
pulls at a casual gamer, pulls a different type of gamer.
But if I was to weigh these two things next to each other, I would say like Divinity really had no pull onto me because I was just like, it almost feels like Dragon's Dogma 2. It's like, it doesn't really have any real pull to me except for potentially the things that you can kind of do in the game of Dragon's Dogma 2, but it just seems like another fantasy, high fantasy role-playing action game, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And I have the idea of like, I don't play those types of games.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, especially on PC.
Right, exactly.
And this is from like the perspective of a primarily console gamer. It's like, if I'm going to play a PC game, it's going to require a lot more convincing than basically any console game.
Right.
Like a console game, it's like, I'll take a risk on something. And I'm not really that scared of taking a risk on it. But on PC, it's like, you're now we're playing a game of like convincing me to change the way that I engage with my leisure time. And it's like,
it's a harder sell.
Yeah, exactly. Also on your point, I am so grateful for when Dragon's Dogma came out. Because like at this point I'm like I'm not like soured on it, but I'm like so glad that I didn't commit time to it.
Yeah.
Because what I'm hearing is it has grown more neutral over time.
Oh, interesting.
Like it's not like holy shit, this is the craziest thing in the world. It's gotten more like, yeah, it's okay. You know? Hmm. And I'm like, all right.
You know,
there's enough other stuff that I'm like genuinely excited about. And I was on the fence there. I was like, I feel that felt like a game I should play, not something I wanted to play.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because like the Baldur's Gate and Divinity breakdown is really making a lot of things start to click in my head of like what games I actually find affinity to. And it's either like, I want to like taste that game. I want to play that game because of what reasons. It's either because the story seems familiar and I'm down for that, or the setting seems I'm in a particular like point where I want to be in that setting and I want to see what this game's about, or this is a type of like genre, this is a type of game like that I want to be like interacting with, or there's a mechanic in the game that seems particularly fascinating, for instance like Dragon's Dogma, where it's like killing trolls to turn them into bridges, and like seeing that action RPG. I was like, do I want to feel that? That feels good. You know, like, what are these things? What's really pulling me? Baldur's Gate 3's, like, pull was wholeheartedly, like, yeah, the marketing aspect of, like, you can do anything in this game, and the game will respond back.
Yeah.
And then you look at Divinity, and it's, like, that was, like, is the setting interesting? Is the gameplay interesting? Is the story interesting? Yeah. Do you care about any of this? If no, then pass, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's always, like, one thing. Like, Overlord's...
I was going to say, this is exactly it. Like, there needs to be one sticking point where I'm, like, this is the thing that's drawing me to a certain game.
Right.
And, yeah, I think the check that Baldur's Gate was looking to cash was, right, you can do anything. And it's, yeah, like, that's really compelling. Yeah. With Unicorn Overlord, it was like, it's a vanillaware game. So, yeah, like, that was pretty much it. With something like Stellar Blade, it's like, every small bit of Stellar Blade that I've seen, I'm like, this is like a full-on...
Looks super sexy.
It's like, it's a full-on action game, yeah, like, to the craziest extent. And I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, that game looks to be filling the gap that Devil May Cry left behind.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, Bayonetta left behind. So I'm like, yeah, like, yeah, I'm here for that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting. I don't know. I try to think about, like, some of the games that I've been into recently, and it's like, yeah, there's always, like, one thing that's particular, like, drawing. Like, yeah, Unicorn Overlord is, like, the art style and the fact that I haven't played a tactics game in a long time.
What about Resident Evil would draw you in?
So, like, yeah, Resident Evil, the only thing that's drawing me into Resident Evil is the fact that you guys won't shut up about it. Honestly, like, whenever I think about it, I'm like, I enjoyed Resident Evil back in the day, but, like, the aesthetic and the gameplay is really not something that I'm, like, particularly fascinated by, at least not anymore. But the fact that everybody's telling me that I need to play it makes me want to, like, okay, there's something here.
Solid.
I find this solid to be an interesting and
insult.
No. I find this to be a very interesting challenge. And what I mean by that is, like, I am so sure that this game is great. Like, yeah. I am so sure that this game is great.
Yeah.
And what you're telling me, or what I'm gleaning, is, like, we haven't done a good enough job to articulate why this game is so good.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of, like, looking inward to be like, I need to change my vocabulary. Same. Or the way that I'm describing this game to really convey why it's so good.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it is really a feeling thing. Like, with Resident Evil 4, it's like, there is not a game that hit that perfect of a stride in, like, progression and, like, just the way, yeah, that the guns feel and what it, like, how, like, combat feels moment to moment. Like, there's such a good blend of all these things going on, and I don't really know how to describe it in the way that it deserves to be described.
It is a feeling.
It is a game feel.
I appreciate all of this. I feel the energy that exudes from the things that you guys are saying, and I know that there's something special here. Same reason why I knew that Nier Automata was special, and then one day after beating Final Fantasy VII, I was just like, let me just plug in for a second. And then almost immediately was I taken into a fantastic world. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, dude. That game wastes no time.
Yeah, it's like, okay. Like, this is giving me motivation. I feel emotions already with my other friends dying on the side. Like, what is going on here?
Why are they touching these boxes together? Yeah. What's going on?
Yeah, it is fascinating. It is really fascinating. So... yeah, I don't know. I want to play. I will play Resident Evil 4. I will, because everybody's talking about it.
But just finish one. Just finish something first.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Finish.
Yeah. Unicorn Overlord has my attention probably pretty strongly right now.
Choose happiness. Choose joy.
Choose happening. That's what's happening. You know, another game that I would say that I was attracted to for a reason, and I was ready to feel it, and then I didn't like it, was Octopath Traveler. Like, I loved the idea and the aesthetic, and I wanted to feel what that felt like, and that's why I bought that game.
They couldn't cash that check.
They couldn't cash that check.
I feel like that's a pretty common,
like, if that game was just consensus. A 2D pixel-arted game, I wouldn't give a shit.
Yeah.
If it was all three-dimensional, like a Bravely Default, or like, mm-hmm, Final Fantasy III, you know, whatever, like, remake or whatever, on the DS, it's like, that wouldn't have attracted my attention whatsoever.
Do you think the split the difference is going to be Dragon Warrior 3 when it's released in the 2D, 3D? Because you already know what that game is.
Yeah, I do know what that game is, and that's my favorite Dragon Warrior. So I would be... Or Dragon Quest?
Dragon Warrior. I think it was the Game Boy one, right?
So yeah.
Dragon Warrior.
Dragon Warrior. That was... Yeah, I would say like that's also the same thing. Yeah, I don't know. It's about the aesthetic, I feel like. It's the aesthetic actually has a lot of weight when I think about it in terms of like what games I'm buying.
It makes a big difference.
Yeah. Like I can't play Power Wash Simulator. It's just the aesthetic.
I did. I needed a brain dead game for a while. I played in that game. It was
I saw you on my friends list playing that game.
And you're like, "What is he doing?"
Yeah.
I was like this. I was like half awake just listening to a video. Spraying power washers.
On the side of aesthetic, you know what game I do want to get back into but I haven't really found an angle of way like a way to get into again?
Tell me.
Democracy. What is that?
Oh, Helldivers
2. Helldivers 2. I've been sending you guys stuff on Instagram.
Yeah.
Democracy the game.
Democracy sim. Yeah.
Presidential elections coming this November.
Thing is, I've left that game installed. I'm down to play.
I have it left installed as well, but I haven't felt the need to call the horn to get people to play with me.
I felt really good about having platinum that game.
Yeah.
Because I knew that Final Fantasy was going to be
set. I never really gave it a chance. Sorry.
You should play it. Let's all play.
It was fun. It was really fun.
I bet you it's so much different now that they added like the mechs and all these new weapons and all this sort of stuff. Like, I bet it's sick now.
Yeah. To be honest, we played like, everybody knew what they were doing, and y'all were just kind of screaming at me to do different things, and I just sat there and died, and I was like, this isn't fun.
Yeah, That's why we have to play your levels first, and then go through the stages of learning and stuff.
Yeah,
because Justin and I, and I think Alex too, we just kind of like really hit that game really hard.
Yeah, we bulldozed it.
And then I heard a lot of, just go this way, and then do this. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know why I'm doing
this. We got to play.
I think we sit back and we let Liz guide.
I want to dabble, try out the guns. Yeah, like the other weapons that like you can call down and like see which ones of those fit well.
That is the process.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I didn't do any of that last time we played. I came in mid-session.
I would like you to also give Elden Ring a serious shot too. But that's my want to play with you.
I would play Elden Ring if I had someone to play with. 100%.
Yeah, I would. Yeah. Dude, I have that game still installed for stupid reasons, mainly because I just.
Well, really the DLC is coming out 2 months. So.
Yeah, I mean, I'll play pretty much anything if somebody's playing.
I'd start a character.
Pretty much, not everything.
I'd start a character with you. It would be really fun to replay that game.
It's a lot going on. It was a lot of systems. But I wasn't like, we played together. I wasn't like, oh, I hate this game. I was like, all right, I'm like hella confused about what's going on. And I don't like playing by myself.
Yeah. No, don't play by yourself.
But playing with other people would alleviate both of those concerns.
Yeah, for sure.
Have you guys heard about this game?
I didn't like the finger. That was a dumb way to call people into your game.
Oh, yeah.
That's not a good system.
No, it's not. Still isn't.
Yeah.
We gotta get past that still. Yeah.
We'll close with this one, but have you guys heard of that game, Balatro?
No.
It's like, I'm fiercely interested in it.
Is it the game that you added to the website recently?
Yeah. So it's a fairly new game. It's a poker game. It's like a roguelike deck building poker game.
Oh, this is the game that we were looking at today.
Yeah, and I have heard nothing but awesome things about this game.
Really?
Like, like Dustin, our friend from Sacred Symbols, he was like, he refers to it as a life game. He's like, I did not think that I would like this, and then he started playing it, and he's like, and this is a game I'm going to play for the rest of my life. And I was like, really?
Damn, Dustin, are you serious?
Like that? Yeah. Really? Like apparently, it's very compelling. Like it's like that quick hit kind of fun roguelike-y sort of thing.
Yeah, I don't know if I like poker enough to do this.
Thing is, I'm at like an operational understanding of poker. I'm not like a fan of it, really. I don't seek it out. I've gone to the casino, I'm playing craps. I don't play poker.
It's a 10 out of 10, 5 stars on Steam with 29,000 reviews.
This is what I'm saying. Like I
find poker, like I know how to play. We went through a period in my family where we would like play card games. My mom taught us to play a bunch of different types of poker, and we'd play like every night. And we would bet real money, and I don't know, it was stressful for me. I still find it a little stressful.
I like the mechanic. See, the thing is like there's a spot in my mind and in my heart for old games, you know, like I like chess, I like card games, like these types of things are like have sort of like this radiant interest to me, but it's not something that's like that I really tap into very often. But like I used to play like gin rummy with my grandfather, my other grandfather used to play chess with, like, you know, I know these games, so it's like, you know, something like this, I'm like, 29,000 people can't be lying,
right?
You know,
yeah.
So it's on PlayStation and it's on.
Honestly, maybe it would be okay if I think a big aversion I have to these type of games is I don't really love to play a competitive game against someone else.
I just don't like I think at heart I don't Tetris. Have.
Yeah, but I'm good at Tetris.
Yeah, I think.
But also, like, I like Tetris so much that, and I'm good. Yeah, it's honestly it's just because I'm good at it. I am too. If I was not winning at Tetris, I wouldn't be having a good time.
Can we play Tetris online with each other?
Yeah, we can.
I was thinking about picking up Tetris again.
Like you, yeah, seriously. Like you improved at such a rapid. You improved at Tetris.
I was
such
trying
a rapid
really hard,
rate,
yeah.
And like you, the way that you could play and just be like, I am not winning, but I am learning, so I will keep playing. I was like, I love that for you, but I can't be that way. Yeah, yeah. And that's working out well for me, but like, and this is why we are working together as a couple. Yeah, but I couldn't do that.
Tetris
for you.
Is more of a comfort zone thing for me. Like, I do like playing Tetris, and I found that historically I've been pretty good at Tetris. But like, I don't know. Like when Puyo Puyo came out, that was just like, it was great. And it was like a reason to be playing the Switch. It was like the third game I got on Switch. So it was like I just want to be touching these controllers, you know what I mean? And it had like a different sort of like feeling to it. But I think like historically, like I haven't really like seeked out or wanted to get like next level with it because I'm just like, no, like my brain feels good the way that I play. And it's like, I kind of want to like find that happy spot. And that's honestly, it's like foundational for my relationship with Allie. Like we played a lot when we started dating. Like that was like, that was like the cornerstone.
Yeah.
So
Allie's good.
It's kind of like the place where I've like settled in. Cause it's funny. I think she's like technically a better player, but I think I have like more endurance, you know? So it's like by game three, I can usually beat her, but like game one and two, it's like not a chance, you know? Yeah. It's a fun thing.
Yeah, I can't. I am too like disgustingly toxically competitive to play.
I feel that way as well.
Games against people.
Well, this is why it's like if I'm gonna get serious about a game, I get like pretty serious about it. But then I ruin friendships, and it's like, all right, I guess I won't.
And now nobody wants to play Tetris with you anymore.
I know. And I just want somebody to play, dude. That's why Alex and I were so good at like we got so good at Smash is because. All I did was try to beat him as much as possible, and all I did was enjoy playing until eventually where it got to a point where it was just like, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, Justin. I need to go home. I'm like, we can just play one more, dude. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, that's why Alex is he's a like advantageous leaning Bravadier. I'm advantageous leaning Ascendiary.
Yeah.
Like,
totally. That's so funny.
See, the thing with Balatro is like, I'm fiercely interested and I really do want to play it, but I'm scared that I'm going to like it.
What if? Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It takes over.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, I need to at least finish Final Fantasy. I've got such momentum going with it right now that if I stop, it's not going to happen.
You'll lose. Yeah. There's a point at which Final Fantasy becomes more of like a
job.
A sport. Like, you need to know what moves to do when and like, oh, you have to like. There's so many different systems at play at the same time that's why I was so afraid to go back to Remake to try to get that platinum because I was just like, I don't remember anything that I was trying to make happen.
Yeah. Also, like even like so, we're talking about like the hours you put in the game, and you're like, oh, I'm 135 all in, but you're not really 135 in because also then how much time have you spent outside the game, like putting time into researching things,
learning stuff?
Like that's the time I can't invest.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I can't take 5 hours to look up the build. Not like I can't, as in like
no, but
it's something
I
doubt
I know
on,
what
as
you
in
mean.
Like I don't want to.
Yeah, right.
It's an over investment for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the kind of thing I'm trying to interrogate like why it's important, right? In my mind, and I'm like, there's part of me that's like, well, I've got the platinum in the first one already, you know, two different times, and it's like, and this is like, I do genuinely really like this game a lot, and I feel like I'm enjoying the challenge that it's presenting me, so it's not, it's like partially like, you know, oh, I love Final Fantasy, check it out, right. I've got this platinum, but there's also part of me that's like, no, like this, the way that this challenge is pressing up against me is a testament to knowledge and will, and I'm like, I can outwill this game. I can do that. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like a proving to myself sort of thing. But God, will I be happy when this chapter closes? Fuck.
Yeah, I feel like it's something we used to do in games, but I don't know. I don't know if now I'm just old and tired, or there's just too much content to consume, or too much life to consume. But now I'm like, if I get to a point where I have to look something up, I'm like dreading it.
I'm coming up to a hard limit of the too much content. You know, it's like there's, I'm literally, okay, Final Fantasy, Persona 3, Brothers, Pacific Drive, fucking Unicorn Overlord, Stellar Blade, like all of that is just in like it's in like my local memory. It's not even in like the deep memory at this point. And now I'm looking at this game Balatro, and it's just like, oh my god, you know what I mean?
Balatro sounds like a good side game, dude. Like, that's a filler game that you can pick up in the fall.
Yeah,
don't worry about Balatro.
Yeah, but I do. You can't find time for life.
But I do think when you're that doing like
all that.
I think part of the want to do it is like I feel like I know I'm getting old, and I need to like prove to myself that I can still play games to a certain level.
This is part of your midlife crisis.
Definitely, 100%. How good? Yes.
You know? Okay, so I'm gonna say back in college.
That's like why when Elden Ring came out, it was like I'm platinuming this game. I'm doing that, like, because then it's like I know that I have it in me still. You know, I haven't lost it yet. That's the thing, because I'm gonna lose it one day, and I haven't lost it yet.
It's more of a time thing though than
college.
Sometimes Elden Ring was a skill thing for sure.
In college, I would drink to get drunk. And by the time I turned 21, I started realizing what it was like to drink to enjoy drinking. I feel like you're still in college playing games to get drunk right now versus just picking the ones that you want to play. But it could be that you'll enjoy all of them for different reasons. So that's fine, too, if you like drinking. You know.
Yeah, it's you also hate plays some things.
I think it's a wiring thing. I think there is a certain neuroticism to it. But there's also a level that it's just like, that this is the way that I like to enjoy games.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
if that's the way it is,
it would be deeply unsatisfying for me to not finish something. You know what I mean? The finishing something is, it's not like, I mean, it all of this is indulgence, right? But there's part of it that's like, no, it's just like, this is the way that I want to experience this thing. You know, I like feeling the resistance a little bit so I can like get past it and then like feel, I can put a fork in it. It's done. Yeah. You know? So it's just a wiring thing, I think.
Yeah.
More than anything.
As long as you're enjoying it and it's not interfering with other things. Like, I drink every night.
That's probably
is that a problem?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's fine.
Yeah.
As long as it's not interfering with my day to day, it should be okay.
Yeah. As long as we don't talk about it, then it's fine.
Yeah. No,
it's
interesting because in some ways I think playing games in this way allows me to appreciate them more. Like I think I've gained a different and a, like, I don't want to say deeper, but like I've hit a different personal high with Final Fantasy having done the things that I'm doing.
I think summon an understanding of video games that not many can say that they have. And I would say that's something that you should be definitely proud of.
And definitely with a game, I 100% could see how that would happen with a game like Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
Like, it's definitely something that's like puts in all these extra challenges for you that makes you need to interact with the game differently.
Yeah.
And therefore like appreciate it in a different way.
Yeah. On the flip side, there are situations where it's like, this game should be something important and I'm going to hate play this to find out why it's good. And then it just never comes.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, now I do feel like I wasted my time. And I have this useless achievement.
There are the other games where you had to... What is that one horror game where with the choices?
Oh, The Quarry.
Yes.
Yeah. That was weird. I don't know where that was.
Yeah.
It might have been a weird spot in my life with that one.
That one you were hate playing. And the whole time you were playing it, you were like, I hate this game.
Yeah. Well, it's just so brain dead, you know? All right. We've been going like 20 minutes longer than we said we would go. Let's wrap it up.
Wrap it up.
Guys, this has been episode 89 of the Kurt Raid podcast. Episode 90 next time.
Wow.
Almost at 100.
Fancy for 100.
Should we?
Should we get Alex back in person?
Whoa. That's up to him.
Yeah. I don't know if you can take that wrong.
Yeah. For now, though.
Is next week... Sorry to interrupt. Is next week the podcast that we're doing, the Final Fantasy spoiler cast with Alex?
Correct. Yes. So we will be on with Alex next week. Listeners, look forward to that. That'll be our Final Fantasy VII spoiler cast.
Spoiler alert.
Yes, we'll be going in deep on story and lore and boss fights and all the good stuff in that game. So if you are looking for that conversation, come back here next week. If you are not looking for that conversation, come back in 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. Skip that.
Or go back a couple episodes. I'm sure we talked about something interesting. For now.
We always do.
Thank you, Justin, and thank you, Liz.
Thank you.
For now.
Justin. Have a good night, everybody.